So I might introduce these types of treatments in a person who has migraine if they're asking about some kind of supplemental treatment, like behavioral therapy in a patient who is interested in non-medication treatments, or if I need to add on more treatment to establish better migraine control. Sometimes someone might be on a pill form of treatment and they're getting better, but not all the way. And in my mind, I think, well, I could add more pills, but there's already a burden there that the person is carrying. Why not think about non-medication options like a device or behavioral treatments or a vitamin supplement to see if we can move towards migraine freedom?
We are fortunate that in the past few years, many new treatments have come on the market for people with migraine, but some people do not want to be prescribed another drug. What else can we try? And what is the evidence behind non-drug treatments? Which are effective and which are a waste of our resources? To answer these common questions, we have Dr. Jessica Ailani. Dr. Ailani, welcome back to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be back with you all today.
Great. We're so glad to have you. Well, first of all, what is the definition of complementary and alternative treatments for migraine? Are these considered non-drug interventions?
So complementary and alternative treatments is a generalized term that we use to describe treatments that are not considered standard of care, but they're often used in addition to our traditional therapies or instead of traditional therapies. And by traditional, I mean those things that we've done tons of research on that you consider a pill that you take every day or in migraine, an injection you might take monthly or on a quarterly basis. When we really specific and think about migraine, we think about complementary alternative medicine, or more recently, as we've been describing it, complementary and integrative medicine, an augmentation to traditional therapy. So I might introduce these types of treatments in a person who has migraine if they're asking about some kind of supplemental treatment, like behavioral therapy in a patient who is interested in non-medication treatments, or if I need to add on more treatment to establish better migraine control. Sometimes someone might be on a pill form of treatment and they're getting better, but not all the way. And in my mind, I think, well, I could add more pills, but there's already a burden there that the person is carrying. Why not think about non-medication options like a device or behavioral treatments or a vitamin supplement to see if we can move towards migraine freedom?
And, you know, where is the science with regard to, and I guess maybe I'll refer to it as CIM treatment, if that's okay. Where is the science right now with it?
Yeah, I think the science has really been growing. There's many treatments that have strong evidence in CIM for both prevention and for acute treatment of migraine. But unfortunately, mainly many of these treatments are targeting migraine. I think many of us really hope that some of these treatments will start to look at other types of headaches, for example, tension type headache or cluster headache, where there's really a high burden of disease. In regards to behavioral treatment, relaxation exercises like breathing techniques can be very helpful during a migraine attack. Guided meditation, progressive muscle relaxation, when practiced regularly, can really help reduce the frequency of migraine attacks. Biofeedback has strong evidence for migraine prevention. Cognitive behavioral therapy, when added on to preventive medication, can help improve migraine frequency rather than just using preventive treatment alone. So you can already see here, we have a lot of really strong evidence for complementary integrative treatment when it comes to migraine care. We also have some newer treatments showing that some of these complementary integrative treatments can help reduce disability, which is a huge burden in migraine in particular. Mindful-based stress reduction is a great example. It's shown to reduce migraine-related disability and can be added on to the treatment paradigm for those that have migraine. We have several neuromodulation devices that use non-medication options to change electrical output of pain. These have been stopped to show migraine attacks after they stop, and several have also shown to reduce migraine frequency. They can be effective in adolescents as well, so they can really add to that arsenal of treatment.
That's great. Well, I can't wait to dive into the ones you've mentioned and some others as well that have been brought up by our viewers and really get into some details about them. Before I do, I wanted to ask you one more question, though, and that is, you know, you kind of mentioned that you'll bring some of these up with your patients that might need additional help. Is that common that doctors do bring this up with their patients, or should patients be looking to bring it up in their consultation? How should that work?
I think it can really vary from healthcare provider to healthcare provider. And what I just want to tell our listeners out there is don't wait until the provider brings it up to you. I think we have evidence to suggest that it's not always the healthcare provider that will bring it up to the patient. Clinicians might be overwhelmed in a clinical practice. Visits are very short. There might be a lot of things going on. They might be focused very much on drug-related treatments based on their personal training. Also, because there's a cost related to complementary integrative medicine, many of these things are not covered by insurance. If a patient during an interaction happens to mention that they feel some of the treatments are expensive, the clinician might hesitate. I know I often will hesitate then to mention CIM treatments because these can have a high burden of cost to the patient. And even though I might be thinking about it, I might not bring it up because I might be concerned about the cost to the patient. So if this is something you're interested in, I really highly suggest that you proactively bring it up in the consultation. You don't wait till the end of the visit, that you bring it up early on. But piece of advice, don't walk in and say, "Hey, Dr. Alani, I read about some kind of vitamin supplement that might be helpful for migraine. I don't remember the name, but it's a vitamin. What do you think?" But instead, if there's something in particular you're interested in, or a whole category, like, "I'm interested in vitamin supplements for migraine prevention. What's a good option for me? Would this fit into my regimen? I'm interested in having this dialogue." I think that's a better way to approach it, not just to assume that the provider is going to have a sense of what you're talking about or know exactly the vitamin supplement you mean, and just to have a more broad approach or specifically bring up the item you're interested in. That's going to make the conversation go much better.
Well, hopefully our conversation today will give people a little bit more information and they can use to then bring into those consultations and have that informed discussion. So let's dive in. Okay. So first of all, the first one that came up, and by the way, I should mention, we did receive many of these ideas from our viewers, and our viewers also had some specific questions, which I'll get to too. But one of the first ones that came up was acupuncture. So if you could kind of walk through each of these that I'm going to mention and describe them and their level of effectiveness and evidence, that would be great. So acupuncture.
So acupuncture is an older, non-traditional in the sense of like what we do in the United States, but very traditional when it really comes to Eastern medicine, way of treating different disease process. When it comes to headache medicine, and particularly in migraine, acupuncture has been well debated for a long time. And the reason for the debate isn't that many headache specialists don't think it's effective. It's because it's very hard to prove that something's effective the minute you put a needle into someone. How do you show something's more effective than the needle itself when we actually know that needling is an effective treatment for pain? The minute you put a needle in someone, depending where the needle is inserted and how the needle is inserted, there's a potential you could be releasing inflammatory markers. And there's in fact a procedure called dry needling, when done in a certain method, can actually be effective in releasing pain. So this has been an ongoing debate. Thankfully, some of the more recent studies have shown that acupuncture is in fact helpful compared to sham acupuncture. What I often will tell my patients is you can't just go to one acupuncture session and make a determination if you think this is helpful or not for migraine, but you must attend a series of sessions. Studies are showing about 8 to 10 sessions are needed to determine if it's helpful in reducing migraine frequency. And these are usually twice a week. So you're really buying into a commitment. Acupuncture is not always covered by insurance, but some insurances do cover it. Another thing I tell my patients is to look at their health flex savings accounts. So sometimes it might not be covered by insurance, but you can then submit receipts or use your health flex savings accounts to get reimbursed for the acupuncture sessions. Often they'll start twice a week, and then when you're improving, it goes down to once a week, then every other week, and then you hit a maintenance phase. So this is something we usually will add in for patients who are interested in non-traditional techniques, but we have them calendar during that time period. And we potentially won't add in multiple treatments, because then how do you know the acupuncture is helping versus the other treatment that you've added?
Gotcha. That makes sense. And again, you mentioned there is a cost to some of these, but that's great to know that insurance sometimes covers them. I didn't actually realize that. That's great. Well, what about something that's kind of related, I believe, is acupressure. What is that and how effective is it?
So acupressure is using the same idea. Acupuncture works on this idea that the body can be split into these meridian lines. And so acupressure is holding pressure over these meridian lines to relieve pain during certain time points. So there's certain points that you can put pressure over, for example, during a migraine attack, and it might be effective. It doesn't necessarily help every person. And if an attack is very severe, it might not be helpful. But again, in the moment, if the headache is building, it can be a helpful technique to add in, especially if you're like, oh no, I forgot my medication. I'm not anywhere near a pharmacy. I'm in the middle of a meeting and I need to do something to quickly make myself feel better. And you can look these types of acupressure points up online. They're very easy to find. And these are very easy techniques to do. For example, one is just holding pressure in between your thumb and like the little web spot here, and you put pressure down. And during an attack as it's building, if you just put pressure gently, sometimes you can feel some sense of relief. There are other acupressure points on your feet, and there's some around the ear. I think this is where Daith piercing really took off, was the idea of putting some of the rings in the acupressure points. And this can be a really quick way of slowly starting to have efficacy when it comes to pain, but it's not lasting.
Okay, good to know. So it might be helpful in the moment, but it's temporary. Okay, so one of the most popular things that came up were around breathing techniques. So Lexi, one of our viewers, said that breathing techniques have improved the health and fitness levels of quite a few people that she knows and has read about. Does it also help with migraine?
So relaxation breathing actually is some of our oldest evidence that we have to relieve migraine attacks during a migraine itself. We know that guided meditation, which involves deep breathing techniques and just simple deep breathing exercises, again, can be very helpful during a migraine attack. Again, it's a quick, kind of a quick and dirty way to start to treat a migraine attack if you don't have any medication around. I don't think it's a great only thing to do, especially if you have moderate to severe attacks with nausea that build quickly. But if you're in certain situations, or you really prefer not to take medication, or you have some attacks that start slow, gentle, and mild, and you can start to treat quietly in a dark space and really work on your breathing, it might be a way to slow the attack down, or even treat some attacks that are really mild and you can keep them more on the mild side. I usually recommend to my patients, you know, try to find a dark, quiet space if you're at work, shut off the lights, take a moment away from the computer, and try to work on controlling your breathing. The fantastic thing nowadays about our phones is there are multiple apps available for guided breathing. One example, and this is conflict-free on my half, I just really like Calm or even Headspace that has guided breathing techniques that are very short. And they can give you a 5-minute breathing where they'll walk you through how to take gentle breaths and, you know, hold your breath in and then breathe out. And just if you're not someone who can do it on your own, it can really help you through breathing techniques. There's ways to find these types of things on Spotify. I'll sometimes help my patients find the breathing technique on an app, a podcast on Spotify, if it's not something that they want to download an app, and then just kind of save it as a favorite podcast and then just listen through it for 5 minutes when they get themselves in that type of situation. I think the important thing is that it's not just the breathing, it's the environment you place yourself in. So if you darken the room, you don't stay near the computer, you don't actively try to do breathing while you're typing a paper or, you know, answering emails, it's not going to work on its own. So combine the breathing technique with the acupressure. It might be a really great way to calm an attack down at the start.
I love the idea too, that you can either use it if you have identified that you're in prodrome, or if you're in the midst of an attack, you know, sometimes it's scary, right? And we can almost make things worse. I could see that being a good way to help that reduce some of the severity of the attack as well.
Or while you're waiting for your medication to kick in, is that sense of helplessness that starts to build, like, it's not never going to work, it's never going to work. You can control your emotional state and really say, I'm going to take control of this. You know, that's not going to take control of me, and really work on some of these items. And that's the great thing of CIM. A lot of these techniques can be added together. They're not harmful. And you can kind of build your toolkit to include some of these things and say, I'm going to create my migraine space, that when I'm not feeling well, I can do these things together to really help attack the attack and take some control back.
And make it a habit too. Just like you said, that's a perfect thing to think about when you're taking your medicine. Here's the three things I'm going to do to go along with it, you know, and adding some other tools on to that would be great. Well, Peggy has asked for specific breathing techniques to reduce both migraine symptoms as well as central sensitization. I would love it if you have a favorite that you suggest to your patients, if you could maybe walk us through one that you think might have some evidence behind it or is particularly effective.
Yeah, I think one of the simplest breathing techniques to do is just deep breathing exercises. And it's as simple as sitting in a still, quiet place and just try to clear your mind. And you just take a simple breath in, hold it, and then breathe out. And you keep doing this slowly. And when you take the breath in, you want to try to imagine expanding your lungs. It's hard to talk it through and do it at the same time. So Wendy, maybe you can do it and I can talk through it. So you want to take the deep breath in through your nose, hold it, and there you go. You expanded your lungs well. And then breathe out through your mouth. And you can add some visualization to this as well. You know, some of my favorite people like Dawn Buse, who's a health psychologist who has some of these guided meditations online, really is great with the visualizations. And when I do this, I'll close my eyes and I think about myself and my favorite places, which happens right now to be in my own bed with my cozy robe on. And so I'll close my eyes and I'll take that deep breath in through my nose, hold it in for a count of five. Think about the feeling of my cozy robe in between my fingers. And then I breathe out and I think about myself letting go of whatever stress is in my body at the moment. And then when I breathe in again, I might think about what my bedroom smells like, some of my favorite things, which are, you know, my scented oils that are at my bedside, or the softness of the pillow and the smell of my children because they love to cozy up next to me. So those are the smells that surround me. And then I breathe out. And it's in that way of that, you know, I might be in the office, but you're doing this technique and you're trying to move yourself to a place of comfort. And when you're not feeling well, I find that these kinds of techniques can really reduce your stress, reduce your heart rate, refocus your mind. And that's why it's really important that you're not actively trying to do an activity and deep breathing and think you're going to achieve what the point of the deep breathing exercise is, which is reduce that heart rate, you know, refocus your energy, calm yourself. And when I know I'm doing this effectively is because I actually feel better when I'm done. I know I'm not successful when I open my eyes and I'm like, I feel just as poorly as when I started. And I realize like, oh, I haven't really stopped working. I am taking my deep breaths and still my eyes are open and I'm just as frustrated. But I use this deep breathing technique throughout the day, every day, for a variety of reasons, not only for migraines. So I think it's a very helpful technique day to day just for stress management. But it does help me to add the visualization, especially if I'm extra stressed or not feeling well, because that really helps relocate me somewhere else when I can't refocus.
I love involving all the different senses, like you mentioned, too. So that's great. I love, thank you for sharing your technique that works for you in particular. That's helpful. Moving on to some other ones, how about physical therapy? How effective is it? What evidence is there behind it for helping with migraine?
The physical therapy has a lot of great evidence, not in particular for migraine. There are some studies that are looking at when you're adding physical therapy to people with migraine, and all the evidence is centered for people with migraine that have underlying other issues. And I think this is why we apply physical therapy frequently in our clinical practice. For our patients that have associated neck and shoulder spasm, for our patients with associated TMJ, which is very, very frequently seen in patients with migraine, then you're adding physical therapy to really address those underlying issues. For neck and shoulder spasm, you're really adding in massage therapy. We're adding in strengthening exercises. Oftentimes when the neck and shoulders are tight, which I think is all of us these days with our texting, our watching TV and our typing, you know, we're lifting up, you're adding massage to kind of, you know, relax the shoulders down, and you're adding strengthening techniques so that their lower shoulders are stronger, their core is stronger, so they're sitting straighter, and then they have improved range of motion. And this, of course, is going to help a lot of the strain that's coming upwards and can cause headaches that come forward for them. And then for TMJ issues, there's a lot of jaw issues and there's a lot of pain that goes up the jaw into the temples. It's actually really important. There's great evidence for one of the treatments for TMJ is actually physical therapy, because they teach them not only manual work to improve movement in the jaw, but they teach self-massage, which is extremely important for patients to learn so they can massage the jaw every morning and they massage the jaw every night. And I tell my patients, this is essential. It's not just going for a few sessions, but it's the self-massage that you have to maintain and do every day, because there is no real better treatment for TMJ than the protection of the teeth, which you're going to wear your night guard and you're going to wear all the other accoutrements that the TMJ specialist, the dentist, will give you. But to protect the ongoing pressure that's causing the headache, you have to do the massage every day. There's no other way we're going to really help break down that cycle of headaches. So this is where physical therapy, I think, is really helpful. And that's where the evidence really lies.
That makes sense. An indirect benefit, if nothing else. How about occupational therapy? I ran across that one recently in my research.
Yeah, there's limited research right now for some occupational therapy for migraine, though I will say we've had a student in the past who did some research with us. At meetings, I have seen several abstracts about occupational therapy in headache disorders. I really think this is an area of potential growth and someplace that I hope to see future studies. I think there's a lot of areas of benefit here. Many of our patients could really have some benefit of ways that occupational therapy can be helpful. Many of our patients are young and in the workplace, and there's ways that adjustments can be made. I think there's lots that can be done where suggestions can be made of how to modify things for the workplace. There's also lots of therapy that can be done on how they're working at with their hands, that which again, it's all that upward movement that can affect the shoulders and the neck as well. So there's many, many things I think that can be done here that can impact headache. We just are really far on this research setting. So I'd like to see more of that in the future.
Same here. Spinal therapy or massage too.
Yeah, so massage, I really tie in quite a lot with physical therapy. There's limited research here. Again, the research is suggestive that massage therapy along with physical therapy can be helpful for people who have some underlying disorder like TMJ or neck or shoulder tightness. The one thing I do want to say about massage therapy, occasionally massage can make headache worse. So you always have to watch if a patient's getting massage and they feel like it actually worsens the headache, you have to back down or make sure the massage isn't as deep. There isn't a particular type of massage that I've shown to be helpful, though I have many patients that find cranial sacral massage to be very effective. It is sometimes very hard to find evidence to suggest it's helpful enough that it's covered by insurance. I haven't seen cranial sacral therapy to be covered. Again, very costly and very hard to find a provider that might necessarily be trained to do this.
And what about spinal therapy?
Yeah, well, I haven't really seen much evidence for spinal therapy. And this is where, again, an area that's kind of, I think, understudied at this point. There's been some limited discussion on chiropractic work. And I think, again, that's something that probably deserves more research. I think there are many chiropractors that have focused in on migraine and have some research that shows that, that their work that they do can be effective. Some of their work focused on spinal therapy. Others who say they can cure migraine, I don't think anyone who says they can cure migraine should be trusted at this point. So I think there's this really divisive, those that I think are doing really great work in the chiropractic area where I'd really like to see more of their research highlighted, and those that are just advertising and I'm not sure what they're up to. So again, another area that I really would like to see more definitive research in.
I know that there's research that talks about exercise as being particularly helpful for migraine. And I think yoga in particular is one that's mentioned. Can you tell us what is the effectiveness and evidence behind yoga for migraine?
So yoga is one of these treatments that probably had the first studies showing efficacy for migraine prevention. I mean, this dates back to when I was in medical school back a long time ago. And it's really after yoga that all these other exercise treatments really gained evidence for migraine prevention. If you think about it, it makes sense. Yoga is really blending that relaxation, guided breathing, connecting the brain, the mind, and the body all together. So it makes sense that this would have some effect on migraine. And you can really vary the complexity of yoga with the ability of the person. So you can do something as simple as guided breathing and gentle yoga for the beginner, all the way up to more complex poses to somebody that has been doing yoga for a while. So I might suggest yoga and really vary what a person is doing based on their ability level. The one thing though is I tell my patients no power yoga, which is the yoga with the weights. Be very cautious about Bikram yoga. Maybe you don't want to do hot yoga because that is a potential for a migraine trigger for many patients.
And I think it's easy to find too these days. You can actually find specific yoga targeted for people with migraine, right?
Yes, there's some, I think, people who have migraine who've started up, you know, yoga for migraine, and they've modified poses and I think just made it easier for patients. I would often tell, depending on the level a patient can do, we have many patients who can just go to regular yoga class and be fine, and some patients who are really beginners, and I tell them to start with gentle yoga or, you know, look up one of these migraine yoga classes online, which are easily accessible now.
Well, back to the senses. One that comes up that I could see going either way, actually, is aromatherapy. Is there much evidence behind it?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to say, you know, you would always think smell can be a big trigger for people with migraine, but yet smell can also trigger the right things and make you feel better. Actually, there's some really interesting research that I think needs further development. There was a great what we call meta-analysis, a review of the literature out there that was suggesting that indeed there is some start of evidence for aromatherapy in migraine, but unfortunately most of that was in animal models. But the suggestion is there's certain types of scents like lavender, garlic, which was interesting to me. But, you know, thinking on it, we actually know that garlic supplementation might potentially be anti-inflammatory and helpful for migraines. So it shouldn't surprise me that if you sniff garlic in the right way, perhaps it hits certain receptors and is helpful. And then also things like basil and anise and peppermint. Some of these aromas, when applied certain ways, can be helpful in reducing migraine. But the problem is figuring out the concentration and the application was what the difficulty was. So there needs to be further research. It has to be the right potency and the right application and the tolerability. It turns out things like lavender oil can be very painful when apply to the forehead at the highest concentration that's actually needed for it to be effective. So it's not what we would think of like just sniff lavender soap. It's actually very, very potent. So I think that's still to be determined. How do you get the right amount to actually for it to be effective? But you can probably buy some of these things on Amazon or online. And it, I think what you do purchase, many of our patients tell them they do feel it's helpful and I don't find it to be harmful. So again, if it's something that they include in their kit, the things that they find helpful to add in, I think that, you know, it's another thing to consider.
How about green light therapy?
Yeah, green light therapy has come out in the last couple of years. One of those surprising findings from research. This is when a study was being done trying to see if blue light was actually effective as a migraine treatment. And they found actually, out of all the lights, green light is something that the brain seems to like the most when it comes to migraines. So there's been a creation of this very special green light that takes away all other light emittances and only emits a green light. And you can use it on a daily basis for a certain amount of time to help reduce migraine attacks. But also if you're having an attack and you just sit in this green light, just while you're doing other things, it can be helpful during an attack itself. We actually have one of these in the clinic. Sometimes I'll pull it out in our treatment area if a patient's not feeling well. You do have to keep it charged. So that's part of the problem. Sometimes it dies on us. And I've had some patients find it to be helpful. Others are like, why, Dr. Lani, do you have this really funny green light in the room? So I do think it's very easy to have, very portable, simple tool. Again, if it's something that's part of your regimen, it's so small, you can have it in your office and along with the deep breathing. And if you like aromatherapy, you can have an infuser. And these are the kinds of things you might decide, you know, the little things I do for myself at work to make my migraines more calm. And if you decide it's not something that you like, there is evidence behind it though.
Okay, great. You touched on this at the beginning of our conversation, but biobehavioral therapy, could you just briefly kind of touch on this again and describe what it is and if there's evidence behind it?
Yeah, so biobehavioral therapy is the idea of using some kind of technique to change the way the brain is working by either using a breathing technique like we described to change the way your heart rate is working. That's kind of like what we call biofeedback, or that's doing something like what I call homework exercises to change the way you perceive things are going day to day and then change your behavior based on that. So that's something like cognitive behavioral therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy, you might say, you know, every time I have a migraine, I get so anxious about it. Then I get even more anxious and it's hard for me to do anything during the migraine attack. Then I think the migraine's never going to get better. And then I get more crippled by that anxiety. And you've now identified this, we call fear of the actual migraine attack, and then this loop that doesn't end. So here's the migraine that's disabling, then the anxiety about the migraine's disabling, and it's looping together, making the migraine worse. So cognitive behavioral therapy, you might actually work on, well, what's triggering this feeling of helplessness? What are the things that you can do to be in charge of that feeling? And what are some things you can do to try to prevent that from happening? Clearly, better acute treatment that works faster might be one thing, but there are probably other things that you'll talk about to try to address those situations. And so that kind of therapy can really help you take back that control from that migraine attack so you don't spiral and then it doesn't make the migraine worse. So these are just some examples of biobehavioral therapies. Others that are newer in the migraine space coming on is mindful-based stress reduction, where you are mindful of the things around you, and then you mindfully try to reduce how the stress is impacting your day-to-day. And I mentioned how the newer studies are showing that mindful-based stress reduction, when specifically applied to migraine, so there are techniques that they're specific to migraine itself, has shown to reduce migraine-related disability. And then there's some newer treatment called acceptance and commitment therapy, where you realize that you're having chronic pain. You accept that you might have chronic pain, and then you commit to changing the way you're behaving around this. This is really in its newer phase when it comes to migraine itself. It's been in the pain world for a long time. And the studies are very, very, what I would call in their beginning stages of, you know, how does this work within the headache space and what kind of impact is it going to make?
And I think something you said is so important. And that is, you know, we know, of course, that there's no cure for migraine, but it can be so helpful sometimes if you can just reduce severity or frequency, of course, but even just severity can make a really big difference in our level of disability and our ability to function happily, you know, throughout a day. So you can see why these things could be so important.
Yeah. And I think just having the tools to deal with the disease itself, and again, the impact the disease has on the individual. Sometimes you can take medications, but there comes a point for many people where they feel like, I've kind of hit my limit on how much medications I want. I want other things that I can do to help me through this. And that's why having this giant set of activities, whether it's behavioral techniques or neuromodulation or vitamin supplementation or physical therapy, acupuncture, and then you can realize why maybe the clinician isn't going to bring this all up at once. It is overwhelming how many tools we have. And so it's important you have a sense of what's out there and maybe try things one at a time, because doing it all at the same time is also equally overwhelming to you as the individual.
Fair enough. You did touch on devices, and we have another talk this year that we'll get into more about devices, but could you talk generally about the principles behind them and why they're such a great tool to have?
Yeah. So a couple of things about devices. It's the idea of using, in general, electric currents, which sounds really scary, but it's not so bad, of using an external stimulation, which is usually in the form of an electrical current, very mild, to stimulate externally a peripheral nerve, a nerve on the outside, to somehow change the way our brain is working. And I say somehow because I really don't want to get into the details, but trust me, there's actual research done that shows the change that happens inside the brain on imaging over time with the use of these devices that are generally geared towards migraine. The one of the devices, which is the non-invasive vagal nerve stimulator, has been studied both in migraine and in cluster headache. And so these devices show not only promise, but good evidence that they can reduce migraine attacks, that they can treat attacks when they're happening, that they really change the way the brain is perceiving pain. So it's really exciting. They come generally with very few side effects. And when they can work well, and they don't cause, you know, this idea of rebound headache or medication overuse headache. So it's really nice for our patients who have frequent headache, who just can't keep taking medication, or for anybody who's kind of sick of taking too much medication or has side effects or wants to have some treatment that's not always taking pills all the time. I think this is a really great additive tool that we have for clinical practice.
Great. Well, you know, it strikes me that, you know, we of course want to know if these different techniques and tools are helping us get better. So is there evidence to suggest that keeping a migraine diary or tracking helps to better manage migraine? And what's your experience with patients? Do you always recommend they keep a diary of some sort?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question about, is there evidence to suggest that keeping diaries helps? I'm not sure we've looked at the evidence behind frequent diary keeping. I think we all just say that diaries are helpful for a few reasons. I think whenever we're changing medication or we're changing what we're doing, a diary can be very useful. And the reason for this is, how else are we going to know the change we made is effective? I think that most of us in life really only remember the last couple of days, right? Like, I think I remember what I ate today, but I'm not 100% sure. I know, right? Maybe I can remember what I wore yesterday, but I definitely don't think so. So how could I expect the person seeing me to remember all the details of every attack they had over the last 3 months, which is usually the time period of when they last saw me? I know when I see my doctors and clinicians, I don't remember anything, and I have to write everything down. And it's, you know, embarrassing if I forget to do that. I might have questions and I forgot to write details of the things that happened between last visit and the visit now. And so this is where keeping that diary is really helpful, when a change was made, because then you want to say, okay, we added something new. Did it make an impact? Did it improve your quality of life? Do you have less attacks? Are you feeling better overall? And there's many ways to do that. And there's surveys that you can fill. There's quality of life surveys, there are frequency surveys, there are attack surveys, but that's where the diary can be helpful. If there's not a change being made in your regimen and you're doing really well, and you've had migraines all your life, and you're seeing your clinician, you know, every 6 months, do I ask that patient to keep a diary? No, I think at some point it becomes a lot. It's a burden to the person. It's making you obsess about it. At that point, I just want to know, how are you feeling? Is your quality of life good? Have you missed anything because of your attacks? Is something not working? The last time you took your acute treatment, did it work well for you? Is there something that's making you unhappy about your treatment? Do we need to change anything? And those are really big questions. And I think a person can answer that without a diary, but that's my personal technique. Some clinicians do feel very strongly about diaries consistently. I think that's something that's very debated, very hotly debated in our field, but interestingly, we don't have great evidence for that.
And for a lot of the tools and techniques we mentioned today, you did mention some of these provide more temporary relief. So it might not be as easy to kind of track over time if you're seeing kind of, you know, a real reduction perhaps in migraine attacks, but rather, you know, focus on the benefit that you're getting in the moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you were like, okay, I did this acupressure because I was stuck in a bad, you know, minute and I didn't have my medicine and it worked at that time, but then it didn't work three other times, I think that's something for the person to think of and like say, okay, well, if I have nothing else, I'm going to use it because I have nothing else, but it's probably not something to rely on. And I think that might be up to the person to remember, but on a calendar, it might not be helpful then to track that.
Yeah. Well, the last question I have for you is, you know, what's coming? You know, this is a great area for so many people are really excited about this. And so what do you see out there in the pipeline? Are there clinical trials going on? How can we get involved? Would love to see what the future holds in this space.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of great stuff coming out in the pipeline when it comes to behavioral medicine. They're really studying this, you know, ACT, and they're also looking at mindful-based stress reduction. I know that there's a lot of apps that they're looking at online on smartphones and online for looking at if behavioral treatments can be brought to patients in an app format, and if maybe telehealth behavioral treatment for migraine is going better than in person. Of course, this is very in the moment and I think very relevant, because for majority of people, you're not going to have access to a behavioral specialist who really focuses in on headache as a treatment option where you live. So I think this is finally a great time for us to be able to get this in an app format. And that's really one of the crucial areas that's being studied now. There are neuromodulation devices that are really in investigative areas right now. I don't know if they're up for discussions because they're very, very early. But what I do tell my patients, anytime they're interested in clinical trials, I say, really, there's an important website to remember, clinicaltrials.gov. Anytime you're interested in a clinical trial, this is a public-facing website that anytime a trial is being done needs to be registered in the United States and should be put on this website. And if you're interested in finding out what clinical trials are ongoing right now, what's in your area, can you participate? Are you a good candidate for this? This is something you want to look up because it'll tell you any trial going on within the space. So you can go and search migraine, behavioral treatments, and it will bring up all the latest and greatest, and it'll tell you per region and tell you all about the trial and tell you if the trial is open or not. So I think this is a really great resource, free and open and available to everybody who has internet. So I tell my patients all the time to go and take a look. That'll keep you the most up to date.
Great. Well, Dr. Alani, this has been hugely informative. I really appreciate your taking the time to walk us through all these different non-drug treatments today. So where can we learn more about you or follow you or the work that you're doing?
I'm literally in clinic all the time. So if you want to know what I'm doing, just come visit anytime you'd like. But I don't have much of an online presence. But I tell my patients, you know, if you want to learn more about what's happening in the field, go to American Migraine Foundation, National Headache Foundation. And of course, you know, from the Migraine World Summit, Migraine Again, where I'm actually a contributor. So I write a lot of articles for that website. And it's a great resource, I think, for patients and a place to find out what's going on.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, thank you. I know your patients are so grateful to have your time, and we are too. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you for having me.